Welcome to episode 149 of the Sports Geek Podcast. On this week's episode, I chat about the changing landscape of sports consumption with Chris Wagner from New Line.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, known for using more hashtags than Kobe Bryant, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callanan. You are listening to the Sports Geek Podcast, and you're doing that on your favorite podcast platform. And most likely that's iTunes, because a lot of you are still locked into the Apple world and not free and roaming in the world of Android, like myself, using an app like Pocket Casts, which is available in the App Store, I might say, and it is better than the podcast app. But for those of you who are on the iTunes platform or use iTunes in some form or another, thank you very much for the 113 iTunes reviews that have been left worldwide. I'm pushing it really hard this week. I'm trying to get to 150. 150 iTunes reviewed worldwide. That's what I'm trying to get to for episode 150. So please, if you have listened to the show, please go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes to leave a review. My name is Sean Callanan. I am from Sports Geek, and you are listening to the Sports Geek Podcast. You should know that by now. You can contact me by saying by tweeting at Sean Callanan, Snapchatting Sean Callanan, looking up Sean Callanan on LinkedIn, or going to Sean Callanan Speaks on Facebook. I'm on all platforms, and for the most part, Sean Callanan is my handle. So please reach out. Tell me that you listen, and what you like, what you don't like. Happy to take constructive criticism. I don't shy away from it at all. You can do it the old-fashioned way, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. I really enjoyed geeking out and looking back at the changing tech that now allows me to watch NBA games, NFL games, UFC, while I work on client reports and produce podcasts. Now, don't think that my reports aren't of quality and the work that I'm doing isn't of quality because I've got sport playing alongside me on my desk. It is. It enhances it. Trust me. One thing I do is I do turn off the streaming games when I am on a go-to meeting call, because that can be distracting when I'm chatting with a client, and I do a fist pump because Steph Curry does a crazy step back three. So I don't do that, but if there is a game on, I normally do have it running in the bottom corner of my MacBook or my iPad that's sitting on my desk. So it was really good to catch up with Chris Wagner from New Line, and we discussed a whole bunch of things, you know, because he has been in the streaming business for a long time, and sort of tried to predict to a certain degree where it might go. So this is my chat with Chris Wagner from New Line. Very happy to welcome Chris Wagner, the EVP and co-founder of New Line, to the Sports Geek Podcast. Welcome, Chris.
Sean, thank you. I'm glad to be here with you.
Yes, well, as a consumer of your product, at the moment we're recording this in the long layoff before the NBA finals, and I'm one of the lucky people that has NBA League Pass either on my screen or on my iPad next to my desk while I'm working away. Can you tell everyone who's listening, you know, what New Line is, what its product offering is, and sort of where you got started?
Sure. I mean, we'll use the NBA per your example. We've been working with the NBA since 2010, believe it or not, streaming in over 200 countries and territories, including the lovely country of Australia, every live NBA game throughout the entire season. The NBA Network, which is a TV channel, which you have access to with your League Pass subscription, runs on all kinds of devices, and has been a big part of the NBA's drive to connect with fans anywhere in the world. You know, we can deliver NBA League Pass in any of those countries. We can work with a consumer and take any local currency. We handle all kinds of different payment methods. And you can see from your League Pass product, when you look at the audio pull down, It's actually delivered in over 9 different languages. So that NBA International League Pass product, which is called that by the NBA, is a fantastic product that is built on our New Lion Digital platform. In Australia, we also stream every NFL game, every UFC match, as I mentioned, every NBA game, and all that has come out of our focus initially on sports that started back in 2006. And from that point to now, we did 63,000 live events last year, streaming live sports to fans, archive games to fans, live stats, social, I'm sure a lot of other things you want to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and again, you know, the landscape, the technological landscape back in 2006 was vastly different than it is today. Like, we didn't have 3G, 4G, all of those kinds of things. Mobile wasn't a big player. We spoke to Jen Van Dyke about her early time at the PGA and doing video early when the internet sort of couldn't handle it. What was it like in that sort of time frame when the technology was trying to catch up with the internet speeds and sort of vice versa?
Oh, it was crazy. Speaking of Jen, she's actually a customer of ours now with the Clippers.
Yep.
Which is a new customer win for us. I mean, if you told people back 2006 that sports fans were going to watch live events and games and matches on their computer, let alone their smartphone, they would look at you like you're crazy. But to your point, there's been a lot of enhancements, both by New Lion and by the industry at large, to continue to drive really great HD video quality. And now we're delivering 4K video over the top. But even broadband rates have gotten better. Speeds and costs have gotten better. The technology, what once was a big computer, now, you know, is the size of an iPhone or an Android handset. So processing powers have gotten a lot faster, coupled with all the other advancements. And you have kind of a change in the way people like to watch things. You know, they like to do multiple things at the same time. TV is no longer in your living room. It's really whatever that screen is in front of your face, no matter where you are, traveling or home or on a train or a bus. So I think there's a number of things that have happened since 2004. Certainly the technology has amplified, you know, all this great product. You know, fans and consumers are reacting to video. They like to personalize it, interact with it, look at multiple camera angles, slow motion, all that kind of stuff. You just couldn't do it with a cable set-top box. So we've come a long way in a short amount of time.
And it's very much, you've very much taken advantage of Moore's Law, the fact that the transistors and processors are going to keep getting faster and getting faster, and it's something you've been able to take advantage of.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think industry facts, there'll be over 5 billion handsets in the world, which unfortunately is more handsets than people that have electricity. So there's just a lot of mobile power out there, and you're right, the price points have come down, which has made it very affordable.
So you talked a little bit about, we mentioned Jen there at the Clippers, I mean, and talking about over the top as a product. It has been, you know, league driven. It has been the NBAs and the UFCs driving, hey, how do we get our content into the hands of our consumers? And the leagues are growing these digital audiences, and very much globally. Like, that's, you know, the League Pass is a great product, and from a league point of view, but also from a global point of view. But now the clubs are starting to see the opportunities potentially in that global market. Do you think the next trend is more of the teams, the clubs themselves saying, you know, where does it fit for us? And it might not be the game coverage that they've got because those rights are tied up with TV partners and leagues, but you know, 7 years ago, 10 years ago, the teams themselves weren't producing all of this video content. They're just following all the fans down the rabbit hole of, we want to consume more content. We want to consume it in a video form. And now they're getting this good catalog, whether it be long form stories, behind the scenes things that they say, well, we want to deliver that. And there's potential for, you know, whether there's a subscriber potential or something like that. Do you think that's the next trend for teams to say, well, there's potentially some, you know, monetization out of that video, and that's where that sort of fits?
No, absolutely. I think sports fans have very deep passions for the clubs and teams they follow, and many want to be connected as frequently as they like to be connected. So being inside the club, so to speak, you know, seeing those player interviews before they go out on the pitch, seeing the highlights, seeing the post-match discussions, seeing where, you know, the players like to eat and spend their time when they're not playing their sport. People just can't get enough of it. And that wraparound content that I call it, I think, has a huge market potential. You're right that live events are very expensive, and you know, the live services are being distributed also by sports networks, cable companies, and others. You know, we launched a new product with a group out of Singapore called Rugby Pass, which is a collaboration between Coliseum Sports and Discovery Network. And they're using their combined powers to license up rugby rights on a worldwide basis and offer a single destination for rugby. But whether it's live sport or wraparound content, the internet makes the world a lot smaller, and the ability to distribute that content becomes far less expensive for a club.
Yeah, and it just becomes an access thing. I remember, you know, again, I'll probably be dating myself, but, you know, 25 years ago and having to wait a day to see an NBA game on TV and, you know, and wait a day for, you know, and the internet has made it smaller, has made it easier to access. And I think there's still, you know, we're in this phase of everyone's got to produce more content. How do we fill and how do we satisfy this need that the fans have? Like every time we put more content out, that's the crunch that's currently happening now. The teams are producing a lot of content, but it's like we still aren't meeting the demand. So, you know, with supply demand, you just got to keep coming up with more. I think there's potentially an opportunity, and part of the part that I love in the NBA TV and the NBA TV network is the access to those archive games that pop mm-hmm. up every now and again and go, oh, yeah, I do want to watch that game from 1987 or something like that. The first thing is notice is, oh, my God, how did we ever watch TV in that with that type of quality? Because it's, you know, it's
standard definition that you thought looked great back then.
Exactly. I think that's one of them. But I think that's also a really big opportunity, you know, that might be the next sort of digital land grab of who owns those archives or who has access to those archives. And you might start seeing, you know, clubs buying some of those rights back to say, well, you know, we've built up this fan base. We're not, you know, we're not currently in the playoffs, but maybe our fans want to reminisce and look back and dive into history. And it's really because our culture has now moved to that on demand. We don't want to wait to happen. We just want to click a button and I want to watch the Bulls Jazz game from 1997 because that's what I feel like it. So,
well, for the NFL, we actually have a product called Snap to Whistle that we create for them. So as soon as the fourth quarter whistle goes off, as soon as the game is over and the gun is fired, we automatically remove from the complete game archive every interruption, every timeout, every huddle. So we basically take a three-hour U.S. football game and turn it into a 30-minute snap-to-whistle product, and fans just can't get enough of it.
Well, I mean, it's perfect for that, especially in the NFL where a lot of the games are played at the same time, and, you know, the red zone type of package is always work because you're flicking between what's happening. But if you've committed the time, you know, the 3 hours to watch your team, but you do want to catch up on everything, you don't have 18 hours to watch the other games.
Well, plus you got fantasy, right? So fantasy, they're watching players across the league, and again, that makes it easier with highlights and condensed games to do that.
And do you think it's these complementary products that are also helping drive more viewership? In that I have to fill out my fantasy brackets and my fantasy team and daily fantasy, which is growing in the US. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's helping the digital play around, hey, we want to watch Snap to Whistle because I need to know which running back to pick next week? Do you think that kind of thing, the growth of that in the last 4 or 5 years, is also bringing in more viewers on the digital side?
Absolutely. I mean, I can think back in 2006 when, you know, I'll refer to it as simple streaming, where, you know, you just wanted to stream to work and you wanted to be able to watch a live event. And then to drive engagement and to get more people to watch and to get more people to stay online longer, we started to add live stats. And that had an immediate effect on the amount of time people would spend online. Then, because of your question about fantasy, we started adding quad view. So watch four games at the same time in the event you might have four players. That had an immediate effect on engagement. Then we started adding enhancements to the streaming service itself. So we moved from what was a simple stream to one that's interactive. Instant replay, slow motion, jump back to live. And you know from the NBA product, you had all those timeline markers. Mm-hmm. So you can go in and say, just show me three-point shots, just show me dunks, just show me my favorite team, not the other team. You know, and all those highlights get repopulated on the timeline. So along your DVR, you can go back, click, watch a particular great shot, click back to live. It, those type of features drive a lot longer time of engagement, which means you've got more of an opportunity to either renew that subscriber or upsell that subscriber to another product or cross-sell some other type of merchandise.
On the operations, sort of the coaching side of sports, there's a lot of video analysis where people are either coding, video to say this is when, you know, Kevin Durant goes to his left and takes a jump shot, and they can pretty mm-hmm. much cue all that up. Do you think some more and more of that type of content will become more consumable? Like that, consumers will say, "I want to see every LeBron James from every LeBron James dunk this year," and you click of a button and it gets served. Is that stuff something that consumers want, or sort of on the roadmap for that type of things for fans?
Mm-hmm. I think that it falls into two kind of areas. One is metadata and tags
yep.
that get associated with the video, so that, to your point, a fan can search and say, show me all the great LeBron James dunks in the last, 2 years, and all of a sudden, boom, that search comes back with a whole bunch of highlights that you can watch. So that technology exists today, and it's just the effort of making sure the tags are in place so you can personalize the type of content you want to watch.
Yep.
UFC does a really great job of that, allowing a consumer to kind of create a whole checklist of types of content and even the amount of time you have to watch it. And then have your content library actually reshuffle itself and then surface to the top things that meet exactly what you've checked off as your preferences. So that's all there. Your other question about player tracking is really interesting one. I think NBA is probably, in my opinion, the leaders around player tracking.
Yep.
They have, 10 to 20 cameras in every arena. They follow every move from every player, and all of that player tracking data. And it's one of the things the Clippers, you mentioned Jen earlier, is very interested in doing, is experimenting with ways to really change the experience for basketball fans to watch the game itself and use all this player tracking data to get very sophisticated around what you'd like to see and when. It's pretty cool stuff.
And so with that, the tagging and the metadata around the video, is that still a manual tag? Do you still have people watching videos and mm-hmm. that kind of thing? Is it still manual, or is the technology starting to move to that AI, and so it can recognize players and shots yep. and stuff like that? Is that where the tech is moving?
The tech is there in a couple of ways. We can do very interesting things with closed captioning. So mm-hmm. the closed caption text that goes along with a video can actually create automatic tags out of those words. It's called an auto tagger.
Yep.
And you run all that closed captioning through our auto tagger, and you produce all the tags that then get collected around the content. So yep. when you go in and make those search decisions, you're able to find LeBron James and anything other tags you want to put around it. So that's there. But you also have even live stats. So stats is data,
yep.
and we've been able to synchronize the stat with the video itself, and we usually do that around an event. So if we stay with basketball, jump ball becomes the syncing event for us.
Yep.
So when that referee throws that ball up in the air, that's our time marker and our time code to sync that particular time in the video with that particular time in the stat feed. So ultimately, everything comes out the right way when you're looking for highlights around stats.
Yeah, and how much is it, again, talking about the changing consumer patterns, because there is still those people that go, that's the game I want to watch, click the button, I want to watch it, as opposed yeah. to the ones that do want to dive in and go, oh, I want to do a slow-mo. Like all of these new features, is it going to those hardcore fans that want to dive in, but then as those features sort of grow organically and people go, oh, I did not know you could do that. How do you How do you, when you release these new features, how do you make sure that the market that is probably very comfortable and happy with the product they're getting because they're getting their favorite sport, whether it be UFC or NFL or NBA or that kind of thing, how do you then say, oh, here's a new feature, here's something else that enhances it? Is it part word of mouth? How do you sort of go about that?
Well, it's a very good question, and when you think about sports that have a seasonal calendar, you typically are signing somebody up again at the beginning of the next season.
Yep.
So features like I've mentioned become really strong things in a marketing message to make sure you renew for the next season. You ask a very good point about usage, right? In some cases, it's great marketing to get you renewed, and the fan really just wants to lean back and watch the game. So you do have some of that. You know, multi-camera angle, I would say, to be one of those features that sounds really cool when you sign up for the service. But ultimately, fans, you know, tend to watch whatever the broadcast feed is that is being produced by the sports network. So some of it is marketing, candidly, mm-hmm. to make sure that you stay a fan and renew and you don't churn out. But I think also, especially for archive and condensed games, you know, you watched a great football match and you're back at work and it's Monday and you're really interested in going back and seeing some things from that weekend's match. I think on the archive side, people like to go to great plays, great situations and get there quickly. So, you know, those features become really important in terms of how you find it, replay it. Slow motion with surfing as a great example. They used to be on YouTube and World Surf League. We do all their live events. And, you know, for surfing, to watch somebody surf those monster waves in Australia, but also be able to watch it in slow motion and then control the frame rate back and forth, it just changes the way you watch it, right? It's really cool. And you do that on your mobile device.
Yeah. And the thing is, I guess part of it is, here's the feature, like the condensed game, the snap to whistle. I must admit, you know, when I saw the tweets that, you know, Klay Thompson got 60 points and, you know, had 11 dribbles. So you watched a condensed game, you got every single shot and you saw the excitement. Yeah, you didn't have to do it. And then the other part is, I guess you're also leveraging off the hot mobile products and what's happening. So if someone's with, you know, watching surfing and they expect to be able to pinch and zoom to pause it and rewind it and that kind of thing, because that's what other products are doing, that's sort of the other way that you're sort of saying, well, that they're sort of expecting you're sort of taking those markers of fans trying to click and how they're using the app to go, they're using it intuitively that, oh, I think I can pause here and rewind by just tapping the screen and winding back. So some of the education piece is just, I guess, general mobile phone usage, and this is how people expect it to do, and you sort of just got to follow that expected behavior to a certain degree.
Exactly, and that's another place for us to innovate. You know, with the NBA, since we started talking about them, they found that they had a really high rate of mobile usage. Mm-hmm. So because we were able to show them the amount of fans that watched full games on mobile, they created a mobile-only camera feed. So the camera actually sits on the scorer's table right on the court and produces all these tight shots. I don't know if you've seen it on your phone.
Yeah, I have.
It very cool. Instead of the pan away shot, you know, if you're watching on a big screen looking down into the arena, really isn't, you know, suited for a small mobile screen. So those tight shots on the mobile only feed create some really interesting ways to experience basketball on a smaller screen. And then next year you'll see a lot of the highlights, instead of just being markers, you'll actually see the five players on the court, you know, their pictures, their photos kind of pan out of the tray of your phone.
Yep.
And you can, with your finger, move them around. You can bring up stats. You can see who the sponsor is. I mean, just all kinds of things that make that small screen, you know, very interactive.
And it's effectively, to a certain degree, almost making the viewer the producer. You're just saying, here's all the pieces that the producer has. If you're a courtside guy, you can watch the courtside view. You know, if you want to sit behind the, you know, if you want this camera angle, you can watch it from this camera angle. I know that's, you know, I think, you know, the All-Star game and that where they rolled out different angles and specialized cameras, it sort of was where you go, oh, I am going to look at it from that angle. What does it look like?
Absolutely.
Because you always get it from the, you know, the broadcast view, you know, from one side of the court, that kind of things. And whenever you see something from a opposite side, it's a bit, Yeah, it's a bit disorienting to the viewer, but you know, you're in control, so you can decide what you want.
And that's that change, I think, certainly with millennials, you know, prefer to have that level of interaction with what they're watching, you know, versus, you know, an older fan who may be very accustomed to the couch, the remote control, and the big TV. You know, as the fan base changes, it's really important for people that own sport rights, you know, to deliver services that are going to engage, you know, all demographics of the fan base, but certainly the younger fan is their future, right?
Yes.
So they need to be able to have the right kind of content and the right kind of service for the younger fan, because that's the future of their sport.
Yeah. I think I heard the phrase, and I would love to credit it, but I can't say it. I think it flew by one of my Twitter feeds. It's a bit of the cord cutters versus the cord nevers. Like there's a whole market of fans that have never been, you know, a cable subscriber. So their first and only experience with interacting with sport is from a mobile point of view. So it's,
yeah,
you don't have to conform to this is how Monday Night Football was always done. So we always have to do it this way, because yeah, there is this demand for, well, I want a different point of view. I want the, you know, the GoPro style version, because that's the types of videos I want. I want to see that in my professional sports coverage. So it sort of does shake up the broadcasting game a lot in what the customer wants.
Absolutely. Agreed.
The other thing from a streaming and digital broadcast point of view that's really taken off in the last couple of years is all the social networks are putting their hands up to say, we are platforms you can broadcast on. First it was, you know, Twitter with Periscope and Meerkat, and they sort of fought it out. Facebook has pushed in really hard with Facebook Live, and now Facebook 360, that sort of that entree into the VR and that kind of stuff. And we're seeing, you know, the guys at NextVR do stuff like broadcast whole games. Where are the social players in this space, and how have they helped, I guess, a bit of rising tides lift all boats, you know, more people watching games because they're watching it on their phone? How has that sort of changed the landscape a little bit?
Well, live sport is the, you know, probably the last appointment you're actually going to keep.
Yep.
Because the rest of the world is moving to on demand. So because audiences show up in big numbers and the passion runs so strong with sport fans, the rights fees for sports continue to escalate. And the social media platforms, I mean, you mentioned Twitter. So Twitter last year for $10 million bought the Thursday night NFL package, yep, non-exclusively. So you could watch those games in a number of other places in addition to Twitter.
Yep.
And then in 1 year you have Amazon, you know, move that number from $10 to $50 million to get the same games non-exclusively. So a big increase in 1 year. And the reasons for that are, you know, it's the next distribution platform for video. What was a TV antenna that became a cable and satellite company is now becoming a digital platform. And these big social players have big audiences there that they need to feed content to keep them online. So if you're Amazon Prime customer watching Thursday night football, oh, by the way, here's some targeted ads that run around that game. So it gives Amazon an opportunity to cross and upsell you while you're glued to your screen watching Thursday night football. And I think you have the same thing with Facebook. You know, you've got the same targeted advertising that's happening down your Facebook rail as you watch live. And advertising is getting very pinpointed, very precise. Data's driving exactly the type of things that I should be advertising to you. And to keep you online longer, you need great content, and live sports content becomes the honey for the bees, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, I think what the social networks have found out, and it has been that awkward dance between the social networks and sports and rights holders saying, yes, our fans are over there, we've built up a fan base, but we've, you know, our other partners, our other platforms, TV and radio, they're paying for our rights to broadcast it. So the fact that, you know, Twitter starts doing the deals, you know, Snapchat did the Super Bowl deal where they did specific stuff, and now you've got Amazon coming to the party, the social networks are coming to it as a more of a traditional player, and they know now that they have to buy the rights.
Absolutely.
And the good thing is it grows the brand, it grows the audience, gets exposure to more people, and then that funnels back to you know, the League Pass products or the NFL product or the UFC product. So I think it's a it's good that they're now part of the more traditional ecosystem of saying, hey, we're gonna pay for this type of content, whether it be the live feed, you know, the live game product like the NFL with Twitter and Amazon, or you know what we're seeing Facebook doing in you know paying teams for a specific you know live show that they want to be done exclusive on the platform, because they know it's that they're realizing the same thing that TV networks have is, like you said, sports fans are super passionate, they'll go to the platform that offers their programming, and it becomes a real opportunity for teams for a monetization around what they're doing.
Absolutely. And for consumers and for fans, this is all great stuff, because it's just going to generate even more content. And if you're passionate about a particular club, you're going to get more content and you're going to be able to connect to it, you know, wherever you're at. So for fans and for consumers, I think all this bodes really well around availability of content, volume of content, and your ability to personalize the type of stuff you'd like to watch.
I mean, talking tech with people in the industry, I really don't like saying where are we headed, because if you look over your shoulder and look where we've been just in the last like 18 months and the last 2 years, it's like some of it is really unpredictable, and you wouldn't have thought you were gone. But I'm going to ask it anyway, like, because you've been doing this since 2004 with Newline, and it's like you have to be looking forward to say where's next. Is there where are the places that you're looking for next? So where video and streaming and digital is headed?
Well, we've always been focused on the fan experience as a way to differentiate in the market.
Yep.
Much like the comments we've been talking about around NBA League Pass. We see VR as a really interesting way to create new experiences, best seat in the house, rowdiest part of the arena, you know, walk out with the team in the tunnel. Those VR experiences, I think, bring a real level of connection with the club or the team you're watching that can be delivered live, that can be delivered on demand, that can be delivered as highlights.
Mm-hmm.
They can be watched in a headset, they can be watched on a phone or a tablet. So we're a big believer of VR, and have been doing some really cool things with Nokia. And then you add all of the immersive ways to experience video. Esport is growing like crazy.
Yep.
NBA has launched a whole esport league to bring in new fans that wouldn't traditionally watch an NBA game but may want to participate in an eSport so that they can actually play the game themselves in that game. So we think eSports is going to be a great opportunity to expand audiences and viewers. And then added to that, you have all the augmented reality opportunities to do video overlays and do some really interesting things with video to put you in places or put things around you while you're, you know, physically in your office. I mean, the early elementary view of that would be Pokemon, but, you know, I see some really cool things happening around augmented reality with video. Certainly VR is a lot closer than that.
Yep.
With what Nokia has done with their Ozo lineup of cameras. But, yeah, it's nothing but great new experiences, I think, to come. 4K would be another one. If you can imagine watching, you know, a football match at four times the quality of HD delivered over your internet directly to your Sony UHD set, I mean, we're there for that.
Yeah.
So there has to be a production of more 4K content, and that's coming. But if you really like sport, seeing it at four times the quality of HD on a large 60-inch screen, that's pretty compelling. And you got high dynamic range coming with it as well, which is only going to make your smartphones look even better. So video quality, I think we continue to break new grounds on.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that, you know, whatever, only 10 minutes ago we were discussing and laughing about standard definition. we will be effectively doing the same with high definition when we get 4K content. And I think the piece on VR, it's sort of like, we all know it's coming, and we are all, you're impressed when you put it on, you get some good VR content. At the moment, it's just the content is few and far between, and it hasn't had that breakout star. It hasn't had that, oh my, you know, that water cooler, hey, have you seen this? You must put on this headset, or you know, and it might actually end up being the hardware. It might be someone builds a headset that doesn't, you know, doesn't look like it's part of a you know, an alien movie like that, and that's easy to put on and it's, you know, comfortable. I think it's a combination of killer content, and as that tech sort of merges, eventually it's going to be, you know, something that goes, oh, that's just what you do. And I think, you know, obviously Facebook with Oculus is pushing really hard in that space, and they've got a massive platform to prove, to say this proves it, and then it will be that fight for, you know, is there a colliding of the tech? Is it a, you know, Nokia thing? Is it a Samsung thing? Is it an Oculus? Like, there's going to be that fight over the tech on who does it better. But in the end, it's going to be the content, because no one says, what TV have you got? They just say, oh, my TV is going to be a 4K TV. Yes, you can pick all the different types of TVs, but it'll end up being the content will be the king. So I think that's some of the, you know, some of the opportunity in the space. And once that content starts filling out, then the mainstream will follow, in the same way that, you know, again, before the iPhone, people would never have thought to be watching videos on their phone, let alone live streaming ones. So it's led by the tech.
Yep, agreed. I mean, it's all exciting stuff.
Is there? So I want to finish things off with the Sports Geek Closing Five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I did, a baseball game. Matter of fact, I was, I think, in second grade, and a woman stood up on the first baseline and got hit with a baseball. So I'll never forget it.
Was it? Do you remember who was playing and where it was?
Washington D.C. The Senators, Washington Senators moved to Texas, I think, after that. Okay. So, yeah, that was my first game.
And would you have a favorite food or food memory at a sports event? Is there a go-to food that you seek out when you're at a game?
Got to be a hot dog.
Hot dog? Is it fully loaded, or is it
fully loaded? You got to have everything on it. Nothing like a big hot dog with a steamed roll with sauerkraut and mustard.
No chili
you can't
sauce.
Beat it. I don't do that because it usually ends up on the front of me.
No, well, that's allowed at a ballpark. That's expected. If you're not walking out with stains of chili and beer, then you probably haven't done the game right.
That's true.
What's the first app that you open in the morning?
Well, I usually am an ESPN guy.
Yep.
Followed by Wall Street Journal. So before I finish the first cup of coffee, sports is a lot easier on the mind. And then I switch into business mode, but that's typically how I get my day started.
Is there someone, and you know, I really like asking this question because sometimes they come from completely left field. Is there someone that you think that the Sports Geek Podcast listeners should follow and why? Whether it's, you know, a leader in your field or someone that you keep an eye on from a technology point of view that shares a lot of stuff, or there's someone that's killing it in a certain area that people might not know about.
You know, we have such a broad base of sports customers.
Yep.
I watch so much of it, and all of them have moved the needle in the last couple of years. You know, I would say at the top of the list for me would be the NBA.
Yep.
And I think they've been a leader in what they've done digitally. And that includes social. I think one out of seven people in the world follow the NBA on social media.
Yep.
I think they're a very inclusive group, from young fans to old fans. They're very diversified in terms of the fan base, women, men, you know, different ethnic groups. So they're very inclusive of what they do with the sport. And it's a global sport. And if I had to point to a particular league that I think is really done it well in digital, it would be the NBA.
Yeah, and I do think it is that that policy of letting their content be on any platform, and they're not playing that, mm-hmm. that whack-a-mole, hey, that's our content, you're not allowed to post it. And it's a definitive strategy, but the fact that they've pushed their content far and wide on social, on multiple platforms, and also allow fans to remix it and embrace it, you know, the NBA-dominated Vine, with people just pulling out their phone and doing a highlight. But they knew that, you know, seeing Steph Curry, put some guy on skates means that you end up going to NBA.com to watch the highlight, or you end up opening up League Pass. So I think, you know, you can really attribute their growth around what they've done with their rights and the, where they've allowed their rights to be. Because you're right, one in every seven, you know, getting those kind of numbers in social is because more people are talking about it and sharing it.
Yeah, absolutely. They've done a great job.
What is your in the Kevin Durant, you're the real MVP style? What social media platform is your MVP?
I'm a Twitter guy.
Yep.
I use that to really stay on top of the news that I'd like to follow. So I would pick them first. But I'm also I like to stay really connected to my own family, mm-hmm. and they're all Instagram people.
Yep.
So I kind of go back and forth between the two. Yep. That's how I stay connected to other Wagners.
Definitely. I mean, that's the thing. Instagram is, you know, when you're in this world of constantly getting hit up with more information, more news, Instagram is a nice, I just want to switch off a little bit and connect with people
yes.
and, you know, double tap, whether it's someone sitting by a lake that's your cousin and you go, yes, I approve of those messages, that kind of thing. It is a little bit of a softer. It's not bombarding you with, here's another article that you need to read.
Yeah, and we actually are launching in Australia a National Geographic service with Optus.
Okay.
And National Geographic, I think, is one of the – I think they have close to 75 million followers on Instagram.
Yep.
I mean, just a fantastic channel to follow.
Oh, exactly, yeah. And that's the thing that's – I do find that people the differences between, say, you know – that, you know, Twitter is, hey, I want to follow news. That's where news is going to break. If something is happening in the world, I'll go to Twitter. You know, Facebook is where I'm connecting with my friends and my family. And, you know, I joke, it's also where I stalk people I went to high school with.
Yeah.
But Instagram is I'm following my passions. And, you know, and so, yes, it's family. But if you're a wine person or a travel person or a art person or an architecture person, that's where, you know, or a Nature in this place, National Geographic. It's a great platform for that, and so it's very different.
Cool.
It's very different in that, you know, yes, they're both owned by Facebook, and Facebook's trying to connect you with all your Facebook friends. But it's like, that's not how people have traditionally consumed Instagram. It may change over time. There's no set course for all of these platforms, but it definitely seems to be that you have your six passions, and you know, when I'm talking to clubs, I just say, as long as you're one of those six passions, your Instagram strategy is fine. You've just got to keep servicing that fan base.
Yeah.
So, Chris, if people wanted to connect with you, chat with you, what's the best place for them to connect with you on the internet?
They can send me an email at chris.wagner@newline.com, or they can follow me on Twitter. It's WAGCH01@twitter.com.
Terrific.
Either way is fine.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Very much appreciate it, and keep up the fine work as a consumer of your products. It's definitely made more sports more accessible for me being in Australia, and look forward to catching up soon.
Great, thank you, Sean. Thanks for the time.
Sign up for Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/signup now.
Thanks again to Chris Wagner. Send him a tweet. Send him a tweet to WAGCH01 and tell him which one of the services that we discussed is in your consumption, your monthly consumption. Are you a League Pass person? Are you UFC? Do you consume the Snap to Whistle product that they do for the NFL? Send him a tweet. Tell him that you listen or tell him that you watch and how you use it. Are you one of those... open the app, click the button and cast it to your Google Chrome? Or do you watch it mobile as you're sitting on the train and watch the condensed game? It's, you know, it is as interesting as much as the tech is also how the fans are interacting with the product. And as Chris said, yes, you want to dive in on the tech, but it's all about the fans and their fan experience. And so, yeah, I thought he would be definitely interested in hearing how you watch it, how you use it, how it's changed your behavior as a viewer. Because that's the area they're trying to develop. I'm hoping to see some familiar faces at Steve Sammartino's book launch on June 20. If you're in Melbourne, please go to stevesammartino.com/booklaunch. As I mentioned over a couple of episodes, Steve, or Sammer as he's known to me, is a good mate of mine. He launched his first book, The Great Fragmentation, in 2014, I believe it was. and his second book, The Lessons That School Forgot, is available now on Amazon. If you go to stevesammartino.com/Amazon, you can grab it there. It's a great read. It is effectively a manual for anyone in the workforce and how they can survive the technology revolution and what you can do to stay in front of it, what you can do to take advantage of it, whether you're an entrepreneur or whether you're an intrapreneur or someone working inside a business. Some really good lessons there. As the job market shifts, as the economy shifts, where are the new jobs going to be? Where is there going to be an ability for you to continue to make money? Plenty of lessons there from Steve. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to hosting the book launch. We've got some really cool ideas. We will be hopefully recording it or streaming it. But there's nothing like being there in person. So if you're in Melbourne on June 20 and you can make it, go to stevesammartino.com/booklaunch. If not, buy the book, tune in, follow what Steve's doing. I promise you, you'll learn every day when you see his tweets or his posts go by. So yeah, hope to see people there. A quick update on Sports Geek campaigns. It is in market. We are talking and starting to develop some pitches for teams. So again, if you're interested, go to sportsgeekcampaigns.com to register. And, you know, I've had a few people sort of ask me, you know, why would it work? Why is this the way to do it? And what I've been doing recently is sending them to podcast guests that have helped show me the way and how I've leveraged working with my teams and my clients from the lessons that I've learned from my podcast guests. This is one of the biggest benefits I have being the host of the Sports Geek podcast is I get to talk to so many smart people and I guess when people say which podcast should I listen to, there's been a couple that have been really hitting the mark recently. Jen Van Dyke from the LA Clippers and her discussions around partnerships and digital and the theme of follow the money. And also Joe Gottfried from Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment on how to monetize social. Those two pods have really hit. If you haven't listened to them, please go back, listen to them now. If it doesn't get you fired up about how you can make money and how you can drive revenue from digital, then I would say listen to them again because I think there's real big opportunities. So that's where I get confidence that they work. They also work because we've run them before and you can check out the case study at sportsgeekcampaigns.com and you can also check out my Money in Sport keynote. And so there's a few snippets of that keynote available at the Sports Geek campaign site. And if you want the full slide deck and it all laid out, you can go to sportsgeekhq.com/moneyinsport. It really is the opportunity for sports teams to offer fully fledged, fully developed, fully integrated campaigns. So sponsors aren't using external agencies. It is very much that sports teams as agencies model. Now, people might say, well, hang on, we're a sports team, not an agency. Well, 8 years ago, you also weren't a media outlet. And now most sports teams are a media outlet. So I know the leap from selling your content and providing a full service campaign reporting and everything is daunting to some teams. And this is where Sports Geek campaigns come in, where we help the partnership team, the commercial team, sponsorship team, whatever your team is called. We help them build pitches, and those pitches are fully valued and signed off by me. So they'll be signed off by an independent party, by Sports Geek, saying this is industry standard, this is what the video's worth, this is what the content's worth, this is what the campaign's worth, this is what the leads are worth. This is the brand recognition you'll get. This is the type of audience you'll get. So the sponsor goes in with some real assurity around what's going to be delivered. And because you're pitching both a campaign and the content hand in hand, your team and your digital team, and that's the thing, I've worked with digital teams, that content is woven in. It's not just sent to the team saying, hey guys, promote this campaign. It's here's the campaign. The campaign generates discussion. That discussion generates content. That content gets published. That content is published with sponsors. And it's a bit of a rinse and repeat. Go back to the kit sending, which sends people back to the campaign, which generates more content. And then that becomes where that value piece comes. And so you end up having campaigns that are valued at $25,000, $40,000, $60,000. Now, then it just comes down to what can you charge for those. But when you're presenting to a partner a campaign that's worth $40,000, even if you do the discounting, there's exceptional value. And I'm not a massive fan of discounting. If you're going to deliver $40,000 worth of value, then you should be looking to deliver to recoup that in the sale. And so what we do in Sports Geek campaigns is help you get to that value point, help you sell the right parts of the puzzle. If a sponsor is looking for brand uplift, we tell you how to sell that story. If they're looking for leads, we tell you how to sell that story. And because that's the key part, they need to buy in on what they want. But you're going in with a fixed cost around what the campaign's going to cost to execute. And when I say execute, it's complete setup of the campaign, all the graphics, all the support to make sure it's working, all the data collection, and even going back to the reporting back to the sponsor without using any of your internal resources. Because we know how resourced poor sports teams are. And so it enables you to have a system to say, if we sell this product, if we sell this campaign in its total entirety, and we know our fixed costs, they might be 7K for a certain type of campaign, they might be 10K or 12K, depending on the different types of campaign that you select to use, you'll be making between $8,000 and $30,000 or $40,000 in profit every campaign. And, you know, very much from the discussion in previous podcasts, once it's named and it's well-defined, most commercial and partnerships teams can sell. That's been the issue. The issue has been that digital has not been well-defined, put in a nice box, put a ribbon on it, so the sponsor can say, yes, I want one of those. That's what we're looking to do. And the advantage that SportsGeek Campaigns has from other products is me, and is my ability to leverage my knowledge both through my Sports Geek podcast guests, my client work, and the work around the pitching and the ideation around what the campaign should be is just as, if not more important, than the tool. And the tool is awesome. Using tradable bits behind the scenes, you've heard me talk about it before, so many different options. But again, without the internal resource for someone to power it and push it really hard, it can be tough because you don't have someone dedicated to say, well, here's the next campaign, here's what we want to do, here's the type of idea we want to do, here's how we integrate it. And so that's what we're looking to do. SportsGeekCampaigns.com, go there to register your details. I'll get in touch with you. There's a video of the Money in Sport keynote where I walk through a similar case study where a client made $20,000 without deploying any internal resources. And the sponsor, super happy. So that's what you want. You want to make money off every single activation and campaign that you do, and you want to make money that's attributed to the content you're building. This is the way to do it. So go to sportsgeekcampaigns.com. And before I wrap up, one last call to action. Next week is going to be episode 150. I would like to make 150 iTunes reviews. I know I'm pushing it really hard to do that. But I would really appreciate it if you go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes and left a review. That would be awesome. Other than that, I'm signing off for now. Hopefully talk to you all in the SportsBiz Slack communities. You can sign up by going to sportsgeekhq.com/Slack. My name is Sean Callanan, and you have been listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Like the Sports Geek Podcast? Find us on facebook.com/sportsgeek. Check out which teams work with Sports Geek at sportsgeekhq.com/clients. Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.